On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk for our On Point podcast show brought to you by your friends at Insurance Journal. And we have back with us again, by popular demand, Dennis Mosley-Williams, who is up in Ottawa, Canada, and does a lot of speaking and consulting and discussion around a topic that folks in the insurance industry need to know more about. In fact, it's a fairly urgent need as I see it, and that is the topic of the experience, because we're living, whether we like it or not, in an experience economy. So welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thanks for having me back, Peter. Always a pleasure.
And just so people know, we say, how do you say Ottawa?
You have a lot of nerve. Ottawa is how we
Ottawa.
Say it. Yeah.
Okay.
So let me ask
Ottawa.
You a question for everybody listening. How do you say your name without grabbing your own tongue with your hand?
Just I got some vowels for you if you need them. That's for sure.
Even just to read it on the screen makes my head sore.
Just go through the alphabet. You're fine. You'll find it. It's a town in Belgium, actually, Aartrijk is, and it was founded by the Romans, Dennis, in 784, right after the Spanish Inquisition, or whenever that was. Or maybe before the Spanish Inquisition, because the Spaniards were looking for Protestants, and they found a lot in Belgium, and they drove them north and whacked a bunch of them, too, by the way. And our ancestors left Aartrijk, which is a town that means kingdom of fertile soil, Aartrijk, like a Reich, like the Third Reich. And they went to the swamplands of the Netherlands, which at that time was, they literally were swamps. And so the Spaniards got to the coastline of this river. It was the Rhine or one of those big rivers that meets the Atlantic there. And they said, screw this. They're all going to drown anyway. We'll just, let's stop here, have a few beers, and we'll head south, you know. And so all these people went to Holland, and they started a new country. And then they figured out how to pump the water out. And then they built this giant navy, and they went and kicked everybody's butt, including Spain. And they brought these guys back in ships and hung the captains from the top of the sails. And they had big parties in Rotterdam and Amsterdam, and it was crazy. They ruled the world for 100 years or something. So anyway,
that's our too early.
Peaked too early. So that was their experience, so to speak. But anyway, so let's get to the. Thank you, listeners, for hanging with me on this. But so last time we chatted, Dennis, you outlined what the experience economy is and a little bit of why it's important for folks and all industries to know about this, and you painted some pictures of other industries where this was already happening and such. And I thought we could focus this one on, okay, I kind of get the why of it, and I kind of think I know what it is, but how do I make this shift to the experience economy?
Okay, one time while I was in the Toronto airport, I started chatting with a pilot in line, and he said to me that I have a young nephew who's interested in being a pilot, which is why I started chatting with him. And he said, yeah, flying, it's one of the hardest things to learn how to do, and then one of the easiest things to do. Hardest thing to learn, easiest thing to do. And I remember when he said it to me, I thought that perfectly sums up the experience economy. The experience economy is deceptively hard to learn, easy to do, of course, but one of the reasons it's so hard to learn is that most people already assume that they understand it. So once you understand the framework of the experience economy, it is easy to do. In my case, it's even hard to stop doing. I do it all the time. I'm forever observing examples of experience economy. So to make this shift, you have to commit to staging an authentic experience that delights and engages your clients in an inherently personal and meaningful way.
Okay, so you're talking about staging something authentic. That's funny in and of itself, but authenticity, authentic, is a word. It's sort of like this. I don't want to say it's a buzzword. It's been around a while, but what is it about that word, authentic, that, you know, that relates to this? Like, what is it about that word? Why is it such a buzzword now?
Okay. So what we're talking about, what authenticity is the new consumer sensibility. And you do hear it everywhere. And the reason is, as the economy evolves, creating newer and better stuff, consumer sensibility also changes. And by that sensibility, I mean the criteria that we all use to determine whether or not we're going to buy something. So when you're buying commodities, your sensibility is cost. When you're buying a car or a product, any good, your sensibility is quality. When you're buying mechanical services, let's say, or any service for that matter, then your sensibility shifts again to efficiency. And when you're paying for experience, your sensibility is authenticity. You don't want to buy a fake experience. You want to buy a real, authentic experience. And that's the same thing when you're buying goods. You want to buy what, you know, what we might commonly refer to as the real McCoy. You're looking for a legitimate, honest, and real product or service, an authentic experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you've said... You said these two words don't seem to go together, staged experience. Mm-hmm. Like I know you've got examples of this, but it sounds fake to me, like I'm faking sincerity.
Okay, so this is cool. This is what everybody, I felt the exact same way, and I'm just going to say there's a lot to this answer, more than I can get into here. So just for to be a good sort of custodian, let me say that everyone listening should read the book The Experience Economy, or they should dig around on YouTube a little and check out some videos from Joe Pyne as he gets into this. He goes very deep. But for our purposes, let me just say this, because I understand where you're coming from. Disney is an authentic experience, but Disney World is also fake. It's not a real castle. It's not a Magic Kingdom. The whole thing, and I'm sure you've been there, I've been there, is a movie set. And in fact, they have these behind-the-scene movie-themed sets. One of them is called Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular. I've been to it. That itself, you know, you sit, you think you're watching a movie being made, but then what they do is they say, oh, you're not really seeing a movie, you're seeing how we make one. It's actually a double fake. So we don't want to go down the rabbit hole. But it works like this. For something to be authentic, and this is critical, for something to be authentic, whatever it is has to be true to itself, and secondly, it has to be true in how it tells others about itself, how it represents itself to others. So yes, Disney's fake. Absolutely. It's an amusement park. They've got street performers. The buildings are built a little smaller, so you feel sort of grand walking into them. As I said, it's not a Magic Kingdom. It's not a real castle. All of that is fake, yes, absolutely. But what's real about Disney is the commitment they make to delivering a transformational, completely immersive, fantastic, wonderful experience that delights you and changes you and keeps you coming back for more. So that part is absolutely real. But the word, and I don't want to run on this for too long, but the word staging absolutely does make people uncomfortable because they feel the same way you do, which is, I don't want to fake it. And so what you don't want to fake is your commitment and your desire to stage that specific experience. You have to believe in it. But you can stage it if part of your experience is you want your customers to feel like family. Well, if that means you instruct all of your staff, you know, whenever Peter and his family are in our office, we all get up and come and greet them. That's not fake. That's simply staging. We want Peter and his family to feel the attention and commitment, and I'll even use the word love, that we have for them. And they won't feel it if we all sit at our desk just with our faces in our screens. So we make a point of getting up, you know, and coming over and welcoming them when they show up. That's a staged experience, but the commitment, we want to make them feel like family, that's real. So that's how that works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the other thing that's real about Disney, and you've mentioned other brands in our discussions like Starbucks, is what they charge. I mean, I guess, would you say, that if you really do commit to an experience and do it well, you can charge a heck of a lot more than just being like everybody else, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely you can. In fact, all business should stop trying to think about how to make people or save people money. It's an assumption mm-hmm. that's really dangerous. My customers are interested in saving money. Hey, we're all interested in saving money. Of course we are. Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't be? However, what we know is that while people are interested in saving money, that's not what's driving them. What's really driving them is they're willing, because not only do we pay for it, we get in line. We will line up and pay for time well spent. Don't worry about saving me money. Don't even worry about saving me time. Worry instead about mm-hmm. gifting to me time well spent. Make it matter. Make it count. Mm-hmm. Make it memorable. Delight me. It doesn't take much.
Okay. Well, why don't we walk through a couple of examples of product business and non-product business so we can draw a parallel with the insurance folks.
Okay. So a part of this idea of staging an experience is you have to really believe in it. Right? So one almost like the stand you're taking is that people aren't going to buy from you, they're going to buy into you. So I'm sitting here wearing a winter jacket sitting inside because I just want to reinforce Canadian stereotypes, Peter. And I'm wearing a Patagonia jacket.
Hey.
It's the second one of my life that I've owned. The other one I have owned, and I've owned it for 30 years at least. Okay? Patagonia is, for those of you who don't know, they are a company that makes clothing, specifically outdoor clothing. They were founded by climbers, mountain climbers, and surfers. So they have this real sort of minimalist approach to their clothing and dressing for the outdoors. They're known for being really, really good quality. Like guys that do, and gals I mean, that do big mountains and big excursions, expeditions, they wear Patagonia no problem. It's got a reputation for lasting, for being really, really well thought out, pockets in the right place, zippers in the right place, comfort where you don't expect to find it, really well made, great material and all this stuff. So they're authentic because they make really great stuff that lasts, but they're also about something. And what Patagonia is about is the environment. They make stuff that lasts. They make all of their clothing in a certain way so that there's very, very little waste. They've just launched a used clothing market called Worn Wear, where I can take a jacket or a garment that I own. I can mail it back to Patagonia. Patagonia will mend it if it requires it. Perhaps it'll replace a zipper, etc. And they'll sell it online to the next customer who can choose to buy a used garment instead of having them make a new one. They also give away a lot of money to the environment. Last year, I'm pretty sure on their online sales on Black Friday, they gave away $10 million to environmental causes. So Patagonia is a really authentic company because they committed to making the very best stuff, and they do, and they're also committed to helping the environment, which they also do. If you go into the insurance business, I have a client in Canada. He's a fantastic guy, worthy of a shout-out. His name's Kevin McFadden. And if anybody wants to Google him and learn his secrets, go right ahead. The guy is fantastic. He sells life and health benefits to companies. That's it. That's what he does. Necessary? Absolutely. Interesting? Not necessarily. And he competes against all kinds of other small business insurance guys like him for the exact same audience, selling them basically the same stuff. Here's what's really cool about him. His experience that he wants to stage, his sort of theme, if you will, is all about wellness. So full disclosure, I keynoted a conference for him where he asked me to speak. He brought in all of these companies to lecture to them that day, and not a single person there, including me, spoke about products, insurance, health benefits, nothing. It was a symposium on wellness, okay, on health and wellness. Now, get this. Once he signs you up as a client and you're dealing with him, the very next thing he does is he works with his clients to get them to bring in vending machines into their offices that are full of only healthy things. All of the items are selected by Kevin, but chosen by the staff. He doesn't work with management. He spearheads and quarterbacks this whole thing. He gets his clients to buy bicycles. So if you work at one of the companies that he provides the health and benefits to, your company probably has a bank of bicycles that you're allowed to take and go for a bike ride at any time to clear your head and get some exercise. He gets clients to build urban gardens at their place of work. So he does zero business development. That's it. Literally, I'm not kidding. When he invited me to speak at the conference, I couldn't get my head around it. Like, usually it works like this. If I speak at a conference and it's in the financial service industry, be it insurance or investing, all the speakers are boring. I'm the only interesting speaker. I can say that without even, well, actually, I guess it's kind of funny, but I'm saying it to be honest. This, I was the opposite. It's like, wait, you're going to have all these cool guys in there that talk about fitness and being your best, and you're having this woman who's come in and she's the entrepreneur of the year. She's going to give you her insight, and then I'm going to talk about the experience economy. It's upside down. I'm the only boring speaker. Like, the guy is absolutely, he is inspiring, and his business grows because he's committed to doing this really important thing for his clients. They love it. They're really touched, and I'm, you know how people are. People talk. And when you have something that's really special, it's really hard to keep it quiet. When you have something special, you know, for one reason or another, you want other people to know. Maybe you want them to know you have it, or maybe you want to share it with them. But either way, if it's really something different, unique, memorable, meaningful, you're going to tell somebody about it. There's no question.
Yeah.
And that's how he does it.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the real deal there. In listening to you talking about Kevin McFadden, it reminded me of a podcast I did with Chris Paradiso, who's an independent agent in Connecticut. And on this podcast, he outlined the exhausting number of causes that his agency and he personally gives in terms of money, and gives to in terms of time. But more than that, to get back to the experience of it all, his staff, his customers, and these charitable causes of all kinds, from food banks to bikes for kids and all kinds of stuff, a lot of military veterans type stuff. What happens is he's created this sort of experience around his agency that it's about giving back, and to the point where he's actually able to recruit people to work for the charities among his customer base, not just the staff, but he's created this environment that it's about giving back, and the insurance takes a back seat to that. Kind of similar to what McFadden's doing. But
well, it is.
Anyway.
It is, and here's what that's a demonstrator. Remember earlier I said, the experience economy. It's really hard to learn. It's really easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the sort of rules of the experience economy that you have to get your head around is that the experience has nothing to do with the offering. What Kevin McFadden does promoting health and wellness has absolutely nothing to do with the products that he sells, which basically are commoditized, which all compete on price. His commitment to promoting health and wellness is the experience. The gentleman you're talking about, Chris in Connecticut, his commitment is philanthropy. And he, as you say, it's almost like the insurance has taken the back seat. And that's exactly it. People can get insurance anywhere. What they can't get anywhere is somebody like Chris who empowers them and allows them to contribute to something bigger than themselves. Isn't that interesting? If Chris were my client, somewhere along the way, I would have asked him the question, what business are you really in? Or I would have asked him, What is that thing you solve for your clients that has that is beyond the goods and services? And he might be aware of it. Sounds like he's a pretty enlightened guy. But that would be the answer, right? I make it possible for them to give their time and when they can, their money. That's powerful. That's a purpose, right? That's his purpose.
Yeah, that's his purpose. It's personal. It's authentic, to use your phrase. And he's not faking it. I mean, this is the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's hearing you talk, it's almost like the bigger why, the why of what you do, the vision for a better world that you envision if you're successful with your mission, which is what you do. And so I think you talk, too, about how this this concept of authenticity is similar to a mission statement. Would you agree with that? This kind of purpose.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So this is the other one where everybody just has to slow down. Yes. Mission statement and purpose. In experience economy, we call the purpose your theme. So think of them as cousins, not as siblings. They're not so related. Okay? The theme is the conceptual law behind everything the business will do strategically. Okay? The theme informs the mission statement. So let's agree that the mission statement of Starbucks is to sell coffee. Specifically, I know what their mission statement is because I've said it 10 million times. Their mission statement is to inspire people one sip, one cup, one neighborhood at a time, which means we sell coffee. We want to sell coffee. Mission statements are about objectives. The theme is the purpose of the business. The objective of every business is to make a profit, but the purpose is entirely different. The purpose of Starbucks was to become the third place. And most people don't know that, okay? To become the third place that a person feels they belong. What Starbucks recognized as an opportunity was this. This was the truth. They said, your home and your job. These are the only two things that Peter really owns, that feels ownership of. Everything else he just uses for goods and services. He uses restaurants, he uses pubs. He has meals, he leaves, that's it. He'll go to the next place the next time. But true ownership, emotional connection, his home and his job. So Starbucks set out this theme to be the third place, which is incredible. Their theme is to make you feel like staying, like lingering. And if possible, just think about what home is, for you to leave and take a little piece of Starbucks with you. So the objective is to sell coffee. That's the mission. But the theme that informs the strategy is be the third place. Whatever expenditure Starbucks is evaluating, whatever strategy they're considering, they hold it up against their theme. If we do this, will it help people feel at home here? And you have to contrast that with what another coffee shop might think. If Starbucks were a person every day, it gets out of bed and says, how can I make Peter feel at home? Another coffee shop, if it's a person, it gets up every day and says, how can I sell more coffee? And therefore puts a drive-in window so it could sell to people who don't want to get out of cars. Whereas Starbucks doesn't do that. It's a different experience. They want you to come in and get it. And that's that idea, you know, earlier you talked about faking it. This is the idea where, listen, you can't invent a theme that you don't believe in. That's why it's hard. You have to, if you're listening right now saying, I need to be more for my clients. What's my Kevin McFadden move? What's my Chris in Connecticut move? What's my Starbucks be the third place move? Nobody has that answer but you. You got to get real honest about this. This is how my late father, his name was Gerald, Jerry to his friends, Gerald Mosley Williams. He once said to me, what's the secret that you know that you're using your business to teach? How's that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
What's the secret? Well, a lot of, as you're talking, Dennis, a lot of stuff swirling around, because I've heard so often that agents and brokers and insurance companies, they always think they have to be faster. They always have to think they have to be more efficient. And what they all sound the same now, and saying real-time technology and customer service, and customers don't want to wait anymore. So in a way, not in a way, but I think the experience economy, as you would describe it, is that it's really not about faster. It's about better and maybe even slower. And It's also, as you've said, you have to be, you know, true to yourself and how you present yourself to others. So you have to be authentic. But for those listeners that might be struggling a bit about how to, you know, what do I need? What can I be true to? What is my purpose? What is my theme? How do you get one?
Well, this is one of the hardest parts about experience economy, is you have to let people in. So I would say, I shouldn't just wax over that so easily. Let me say that's what's really tough, because we hide in goods and services. We hide in them. We don't want to sit down and tell anybody, you know, as you alluded to, the why of it, the Simon Sinek talk, which is just so beautiful. If it's possible to wear something out digitally, I would have by now. I've seen that so many times where, you know, in Simon Sinek's TED talk, he says, don't tell them what you do. Don't tell them how you do it. First, tell them why. Mm-hmm. Why do you work in this industry anyway? And for some people, that's such an opportunity. They're so happy. They hear that and they think, oh, that's exactly what I've wanted to do. I just want to sit people down and tell them exactly what I think. And for other people, it's terrifying. They don't want to open up like that. They don't maybe want to be vulnerable. They don't want to say, let's use Kevin McFadden again, hey, I want to be an advocate for physical and mental and spiritual health and wellness. They don't want to wear that. Kevin was wearing a T-shirt at his event with big printing on the front of it that said, Ruckus Maker. Like, he's loud and proud. So the short answer is to say this. Everybody listening wouldn't be listening if they weren't interested in doing more work that matters. If they weren't, my experience anyway, is that everybody wants to contribute. They want to contribute to people's lives in ways that go beyond basic goods and services, and they want to contribute to their world in a way that's bigger than them, speaking of the agents here. Like, they want to do more. That's why people sponsor baseball teams. It's why people volunteer in their community. It's not for business development. They do it because they want to give back. So I believe that about everybody. So my suggestion would be, if you want to find your purpose, that's going to become your theme, ask yourself better questions. What's the secret you know that you're going to use your business to teach? Okay? Mm-hmm. Aside from the obvious benefits of your products and services, what do your clients really hire you for? What business are you really in? Mm-hmm. Just ask those questions. Go for a long walk. Take a while to figure it out. It's okay. You will figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's where you don't necessarily stare at email for 4 hours. You get off the email and get a blank piece of paper and maybe answer those questions in another way outside the office.
Yeah. So think about the relationships you have with your very best clients. Dissect them. Everybody says the same thing. You know, Peter comes into my office. He'll be there for an hour. We're going to talk about, you know, insurance for literally 6 minutes. For 54 minutes, we talk about, okay, great, whatever those things are. Write them down. But why is Peter really talking to you about them? What does he really get from you? He gets this sober second thought. He gets like a pseudo-counselor. He gets to come in and tell me the things he's afraid of. Oh, there you go. There you go, and there is the answer. That's what you're looking for. I remember, I sound so smart telling you this, eh? That's my first A, by the way, on the phone. I sound so smart. Like, you know, I just roll out of bed a genius every single day. So one day, I'm not, obviously, and I spend a lot of money getting better. So I hired a guy to help me do this with my business. Scott Webb is his name. Great guy. Mm-hmm. A farm syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts putting this to me. Dennis, he says, what is it that they really get from you? What problem do you really help them solve? All this stuff. Mm-hmm. Honest to God, I'm sitting here staring at the wall like a, I don't even know like what. Like no, like somebody with no answers. So I was wondering, oh, I'm embarrassed. I've paid this guy and now I'm embarrassed. I paid him and he can see right through me. Oh my God, I don't, not only do I have bad answers, I have no answers. Okay? He pauses, he goes, can I give you an idea? Said, yeah, he says, your clients are the loneliest people on earth. Okay? Now, they're not literally lonely, okay? But when he said that, a client of ours had just said to my business partner, Tom, a couple of days earlier, saying, it's so great to talk to you. It's so great to have you on the phone like this. He went on to summarize everything he had accomplished in the last 18 months. In the last 18 months, I have. And he, it's a laundry list of goodness. And then he ends by saying to Tom, and I have never been so lonely. So when Scott says this to me, I'm like, whoa, how does he know that? My clients aren't lonely at home looking for something to do on Friday, okay? But what they are, and this maybe will help everybody out, what they are is they're business owners in the financial services industry, and they make a lot of money, but they don't have partners. So they do really well in one way, but they have nobody riding shotgun with them in their business to bounce ideas off, et cetera, et cetera. So goods and services, they hire us for organization, focus, and execution, period. Okay, great. But what do they really get here? And it's, they get, I don't want to say camaraderie, they get a trusted advisor. That's what I'm really helping them with, is we're giving them somebody to share with and open up to and get validation from and all that great stuff. So this idea of your theme, it begins with what you know is true. What do you know is true? Here's what I know that's true. Most everybody listening today is going to die unhappy, filled with regret. There you go. Have a nice afternoon, everybody. But I believe it. Listen, outside of work, I tell everybody I talk to go on vacations. Every outside of work, I want to know what people are doing. The guys that I have sort of offices here with, I'm asking them questions all the time. Where are you going here? What are you doing there? Have you been here? You should go see it. I talked to my neighbor today. He doesn't ski. I'm in a snowstorm. I just said to him, I don't know how a person has any fun living here if they don't ski. I'm an advocate for people to do something that isn't watching TV. Preferably outside. I believe most business owners will hide in goods and services. They'll miss out all kinds of opportunities, not just for their business, but for their own personal enrichment. They own the business. They never take time off. And later on, when it's too late, they're going to regret it. They're going to regret they didn't speak up. They're going to regret they didn't try their idea. They're going to regret they didn't fire client number six. That's a massive pain in the ass. Whatever it is, they're going to have regrets. And I know that's true. So every single thing about this company and how I run it and what I preach and what you see and feel when you deal with me is a person who believes what I told you. It comes across in our blogs. It comes across in our talks. It should probably come across in this podcast. That's my theme. Have fun. Life is short. Period. Has nothing to do with business strategy and everything to do with people celebrating you when you're dead.
Yeah, well, that's some really good. That was a long soliloquy, but I know I appreciate it, and the listeners will as well. And we in the insurance industry are very much caught up in what we do, and we're not telling people enough about who we are and why we come to work every day, why we care about our customers. We're stuck in the weeds. So very inspiring, Dennis. Great to catch up with you once again. For the listeners that want to reach out to Dennis, his online office is mosleywilliams.com. That's M as in Mary, O-S-E-L-E-Y, Williams.com. And Dennis, I can't thank you enough for joining us once more.
I really enjoy this, Peter. I do. I would do one every week. I love it. I love the opportunity to talk about the experience economy, and I love to think about all the people that are listening to this. And this is my secret joy, right, is that they tuned in, okay, well, I'll listen to this. It'll be about business development, and it's not about business development at all. And I just love the idea that there are people kind of having a moment right now because of it all, and I thank you for letting me be a part of that. That's just great of you and a real joy. Thank you very much.
Right on, man, right on. Thank you.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.